Good afternoon. It's Home Run Time with Helmut and Dwight here on Eagle FM. Wherever you're tuned in, thank you for tuning in. And don't worry, like we always do, we are just here until the hour of six, bringing you one topic after another. And let's talk about homelessness today. Global homelessness.
Why did you have to start? Well, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Let me also concur basically with Helmut's launch pad of a statement.
Yeah.
That is basically what the world, the UN Habitat is saying. It's a crisis, as once again. I'm surprised they didn't get Guterres to author, you know, like a well-wishing part of the report to say it makes for sober reading.
You know that, SDG, more like a SDG status report that was authored by the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Yeah.
And how it's, you know, it's somewhat different from the one that was last year that was just put together by a bunch of economists.
Yeah. It was basically 2024 and 2025 that we saw the
sobering reading.
The stark difference in language that was applied.
I couldn't wrap my mind around why, what's the main difference in language in describing the sluggishness in the execution in some, in the execution and implementation of some of the, and some of the plans until Antonio Guterres basically gave his 2026 press conference at the beginning of the year. Like the visions and plans that he had and overall, basically in the UN level. For the world, when he pointed out that he's a physicist by training, that's when I was like, oh no, this is someone who works with numbers, and he's not going to lean much into political language just to soften the, to cushion the blow. He'll just lay it out that, guys, it's bad.
It's not just that, Helmut, I am also like a low-key fan of the guy. Do you know why, Helmut? Yeah. After I read up, like you said now, primarily what was his educational background or his expertise background was that he's technically a scientist. And what a scientist does, guys, they stick to the facts that they know, the things that they've done. Now, obviously,
you're dealing with information. Like, this is the information that I've gathered in relation to this topic, and not what I'm saying. According to the conclusion that has been made using the information available, this is where we are.
Yeah. So I like it specifically when scientists and people from a technical perspective, but then there's always the threat specifically of who is allowed to know the information or who is allowed access to the information.
Yeah.
Because it exists literally. And I even saw that. Let me tell you the story, Helmut. Lovely story time, sort of like a piece to get into the introduction of our discussion even for today. Even if our discussion, the listeners, is based on a report that Helmut and I, we sit with the report. So 2 weeks back, I went to, a sort of like a stakeholder engagement, which technically I thought it was a newsworthy event. Let me be honest. I thought it was a newsworthy. Just to go read the thing again. When I showed up at the venue, I didn't see any fellow journalists there. And I was like, did I read this thing properly? And I read the invite again. And it literally says it's for the NSA basically to sort of like, measure and get, stakeholder inputs regarding how the reports, the data sets, all the information that the NSA keeps on their website that they publicly make available to whoever needs to make, reports and inferences or to help with research and stuff like that for their particular needs regarding Namibia. How do they like the website as it currently is and the navigation and how the directories and the layout of the website looks like for someone who wants to access and get certain data sets and information or reports get to them? And then I get there in between the engagement. So I realized I'm the only media person. So I basically sounded like I'm speaking for the whole landscape in Namibia, but
media wise,
but the other participants were from investment houses, were from academia, were from research, affiliated to academia in an extent, and others were from UN agencies that rely on NSA reports and data sets. The guy, the three people on my right, because I was the last person at the end of that seating line, the three people on my right come from the same investment house. During the sort of like tea break, the main sort of like person talking, because NSA invited, or NSA is being assisted by Norway's statistical authority in terms of how they structure the website for future and how it becomes user-friendly for everybody that wishes to use data sets and information coming from what the NSA collects on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So the guy from Norway, what was his name, toch? Okay, but anyway, yeah, his name is also John. So the guy from Norway, we stand there talking, and then John says one interesting thing. He says, Dwight, since you're from the media, I realize that in Namibia, Namibians love social media and getting their news from social media. I said, yes. But then he asked me, but then what about websites? But now, how it usually works, Helmut, is that a website? A website exists basically to be sort of like the primary information hub for any kind of corporation, any kind of institution, any kind of organization. A website is literally like the physical address of a business or an entity. And a website now contains like documentation, and all other manner, other kinds of information that if people wish to research subjects, they can just access it on the website and then, you know, do their own particular, research analysis and whatever from there. Now, he made a very good observation, because if you go talk to any Namibian about social media is not doing what a website is supposed to do. Social media is supposed to channel traffic from social media platforms
to the website.
To a website.
Yeah.
Because the thing what you own is what you wish to strengthen and to build in. For example, we want social media, that's not us, Eagle FM. Yeah. We want social media followers to be channeled from our social media pages.
The website.
To the Eagle FM website. Why? Because we want more listeners. Why? We're a radio. Radio has listenership. Obviously, we've now also strengthened, specifically with the streaming in studio, that you guys can see where you are. We thank you to the one follower or the fan that, that sort of
left
like,
us a positive comment.
Left us a shout out.
Yeah,
you
keep doing
you know,
that.
Thumbs up.
Shout out to you.
It's a shout out to you, my guy, or my lady, or, whoever you might be. But, That is usually how you look at the strategic setup specifically of your communication channels, né? A social media account is supposed to redirect traffic from the social media platform to the website. The website then sort of like contains extra for whoever wishes to engage with which organization.
Yeah.
So John and I, we highlighted that, and I highlighted to him also, listen, that's one of the things that I've observed here in terms of how Namibians basically consume information.
Yeah.
They rather go for social media posts and what social media posts are telling them. Then the guy from the investment house is now listening to us, and we sort of like, meander into a scenario of trusting the information source, verification, fact checking, all that discussions.
Yeah.
And then I highlighted to him, listen, it's one of the reasons why I said earlier to the NSA people, listen, Dwight, as the radio journalist sitting here, I'm happy with the information sets that the NSA website contains, because I find it as a treasure trove. To me, it's literally a treasure trove, Helmut.
Yeah.
It's literally a gold mine. If you want to talk about Namibia, just go look at all that which is there. Now, then I told the guy, listen, because of my background, it's easy for me to interpret the reports for the listeners, for the readers here at Eagle FM, and the list and the readers for the e-villager paper. I almost said it on Afrikaans. Saldi, the guy, the investment house guy says, yeah, but still, it's important to have a channel of, the information set being generated, the experts to be here in the middle to interpret on behalf of the media. I stood there looking at the guy going like, you guys just want to be relevant in order to drive a narrative. Remember what I told you the other day about truth and facts, about narrative and actual historical, descriptions of things that happened as they are.
Yeah, so it's basically the difference between telling a story representing both sides, yeah. than because narrative would entail you basically pick one side and then run with it.
I mean, Helmut, let's look at the lovely thing you like saying about lawyers. Look, the good lawyer is the guy that knows the judge. Mm-hmm. And the other guy just comes here fighting the court battle, ne?
Yeah.
The other guy comes defending his client.
Yeah.
But the good lawyer is the guy that actually knows the judge.
That knows both the law and the judge.
And the judge. Now, here's the scenario. Anyone would tell you, so why is that problematic? Because you can immediately see the problem.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's not a problem, like a crime, but it's more like a moral, it's like a morality issue.
And how it's going to influence judgment in a favor of, in a basically biased way. And the dangerous part about that is what I keep seeing in all the, is, you know, most, I think I started seeing this about a month or two ago,
mm.
with regards to the, to the Fisherot, trials.
Mm.
And one of the comments that I kept finding in those, those videos, especially on the, on social media, is that, they've been there for a very long time, just give them bail. So now the thing is, what you don't understand is, it will be very difficult for the judge to do that. Not because, well, he's not sympathizing or whatever with the people or whatever, the judge's feelings are.
Yeah.
It's the precedents that you are going to set, because you have to understand that, if you do it today, you are going to have to do it to everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But here's the thing also, Hamoud.
And that's the problem.
Remember that these guys have not gotten bail, except for one of them. Ne? Which has been what the other representatives have been arguing since, is it 2019 or 2020?
Isn't that 2020, 2021, somewhere there?
No, since 2019.
Yeah, the whole thing unfolded in 2019. 2019,
yeah. But then the actual arrests must start taking place literally in 2020.
Yeah.
Now, let's literally say from 2020. Now. So imagine in certain scenarios, your client hasn't had the opportunity of a bail hearing. But remember, your client didn't commit a murder.
Mm-hmm.
But the potential, like what has been debated or highlighted in some of those discussions, is that there's a potential for the client to be a flight risk.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the money that is in, what's that, one of those stands?
Oh, wasn't that Kazakhstan?
Yeah, in Kazakhstan, yeah. Some of the money that's in Kazakhstan. So you also understand, feeding into that description you gave,
yeah.
the precedence description.
Yeah.
Now, what happens if there are similar kinds of crimes, not similar in nature, but let's say there's someone that is well connected, and specifically this person has got a lot of financial resources, but they would need to fly somewhere to get the money or basically just run away from Namibia, potentially where there might not be a extradition
treaty.
So yes, precedent, you are right. Precedent, yeah, is an ugly thing. It's an ugly reality that the court has to acknowledge.
Yeah.
But then there's also precedent that I'm basically describing being set already in the denial of bail, but it's obviously based upon the merits of the case.
Yeah, because you have to factor in very simple things here that you don't have to be a lawyer to realize that. The decision that will be made will obviously have to, whatever decision that will be made by the courts at the end of the day, not all Namibians will agree with it. And now what you'll be looking at is that whatever decision that will be made, people will come asking questions.
Yeah.
So if you don't grant them bail and basically follow the due process as you see it fit as a professional in that capacity, when the questions come with regards to the decision that you that they're gonna make, are you going to answer it with most importantly, public interest in mind?
Yeah.
So, take for example, if they just wake up without considering considering one aspect, and that is the fact that they have been behind bars for an extended period of time, therefore, give them bail, then we'll be setting precedents. That means that, we'll basically be setting some kind of statute of limitation with regards to how long someone can be under a prosecution. And then when that time is reached, you have to let them go whether or not they have been prosecuted.
Yeah.
Sentenced.
I heard, Helmut, Namibia apparently doesn't do class action. Namibia's law system doesn't allow for class action lawsuits, which is a precedent setting.
That's an interesting one, because I never actually looked into class action lawsuits.
Okay, like I explained, I have almost got a family member that is a very, very knowledgeable, walking, talking encyclopedia.
Multinationals are known for, those guys, especially now, in Western countries.
The reason I'm asking you that dimension is specifically because in Namibia, we've not heard of something like a class action lawsuit, right? A class action lawsuit aims to prohibit further action in a similar manner from ever happening again if litigation is brought between two parties, obviously in front of a court, to help decide on a course going ahead, or if something is constitutionally sound, right? Or literally sound in nature. Now, when my sister explained this to me, I stood there thinking, she's right. I've never heard of class action lawsuits in Namibia. Now,
I don't think we're that pissed, though. I mean, class action lawsuit, there are just 3 million of us, so class action lawsuit will mean the whole country.
No, but sure. We do have a lot of scenarios that can give rise to class action.
Hey, don't give them ideas, okay. Yeah, right.
For example, like the genocide discussion.
Yeah.
But the question you'll have to ask is the propensity there for the similar kind of event to take place once again?
That would be an interesting one, though.
Now, obviously, from the discussion that I highlighted a little bit earlier about, the investment house guy saying, no, listen, us experts, we must still be there to interpret information for the media. I was just thinking to myself, dude, you are literally saying that if the journalist doesn't read, the journalist doesn't know what they're communicating. And the main aim of us in the media, even you, Helmut, is that even you as a stand-up comedian, you know it. You've got to read. You must be able to read. Read, decode the information for yourself, and then interpret it how it stands, how you understand it.
Yeah.
And then you have your discourse from there is based upon how you understand the information that you just consumed.
Yeah.
And this is literally when you go and read like acts and the laws of Namibia.
Yeah.
Helmut, do you know how straightforward they are? Do you know how basic they are? The real good chicken frozen mixed portions. Okay, Dorashike. Oma veravali no way. Nesenda. Omirongo way no way. Oikera imwe. Yo machine wo clover. Full cream. Ilo. Low fat milk UHT process. Irimwa hamano moka pakete. Okay, Dora. Efere no mirongo natu na hamano. Nesenda. Omirongo way no way. Oshoyo. E kilogram madiri natu. Do right brand macaroni. Omenashike. E dro mirongo hamano nambari. Nesenda. Omirongo way no way. Enda tuedi. Potina shikongu shivyo mafiku atano atulae. Odura oyo tue. Yanga tashi hapu.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. And remember the point on housing? Is it housing information?
Just basically the interpretation of
the interpretation of information.
So I realized that obviously, dear listeners, and this is key for yours to understand. I did a subject known as critical discourse theory.
Hmm.
And critical discourse theory, for example, highlighted specifically how people identify into the same situation. Now, this is also a scenario specifically so that Namibians can also understand if we're talking about housing, which is basically our discussion for today, but on a more global level, because it comes from a report on a global level. And I'm just trying to fact check quickly for us here, Hamoud. Does NDP6 mention anything about housing and affordable housing? I'm just quickly doing that as well.
About housing? Yeah. Affordable housing?
The question mark is there.
A lot of question marks, yeah.
But when people go and read policy documents, and do believe me, dear listeners, some of you love playing politics there on your street corners or in your families between each other. I think
you can factor affordable housing in reference to the sustainable development goals, where they talk about accessible.
Yeah.
Because for you to access something, you must first have, it must fall within your price range.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, The overall scenario of just that last bit of in our introduction that I want to highlight is specifically when you look at the information sets, there's a whole bunch of them that you've actually got to go through. There's not one source.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, guys. There's not one source that will basically bring all information sets to you together. You have to read here, read there, read here. Because, for example, in NDB6, under this, what's this blue one's name? What's this blue? Human Development and Community Resilience. You find human settlements. Yeah? But then down, a little bit down in the environmental pillar of NDB6, you find one on, what's this green one's name? I just want to get to it. You find the other green pillar where it literally talks about environmental sustainability, the fifth pillar. First pillar, they've got a specific segment there on land use. Land use.
Mm-hmm.
Now, land use, the phrase land use is more than often used specifically in those students that you find, for example, at like NUST's land management department, where the town planners are trained in the department. I should have actually gone for that department because I love geography. But that department that they have in the land management department, the sub-department, its name is the land use planners.
Yeah.
Now, the land use planners are literally the guys that Namibia's towns need to literally lay out, design, identify vacant or virgin land, Helmut, to assist with, you know what? With identifying new housing projects or new developments that need commercial developments that need to take place in that specific jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the scenario that you see from that is land use and land use planning is divorced from the national narrative or the national talking, or what was the thing that the journalists that I had to observe, the phrase they like using, the national discussion. But it's technically not a discussion because you can hear a narrative. Remember, the 300,000 is a narrative,
yeah,
because that 300,000 has expanded from 2018.
Yeah, it is going to expand as you know with time because the population is not static either.
Yeah, the population was not stagnant. Yeah, but people were literally contributing and living up to Vision 2030.
Oh, believe me.
No, they were doing their job.
Yeah, so not like I'm practicing for Friday.
What the hell, Helmut? What the hell? But anyway, so when you look at that scenario, there's a narrative that exists besides the facts.
Yeah.
Now, you and I, we've already identified the 300,000 as obviously expanded.
Yeah.
Because it's even reinforced by the NSA's census report. Households have expanded, but they've become smaller.
Yeah.
People are having children. People are moving in, but the children are probably less.
The size of the household is becoming smaller, but the number of households
has expanded. Yeah. So that already tells you there's a need for housing immediately.
Yeah.
Households have become more. So, but when you get into the discussion specifically of looking at, for example, like, this fifth pillar or this fourth pillar of environmental sustainability. I just want to find the one on land use. It literally puts it in the framework of look at renewable energy, the green industries, the green sectors, XYZ, XYZ. Because at the heart of housing, what resource do you have? Land.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the discussion that I had back in 2024 about the compete, I did like a series of discussions about the competing interests for land.
Yeah.
Affordable housing and agriculture. Agriculture and mining. Mining and environmental sustainability. Environmental sustainability and rural community development in that scenario. If people pull the linkages, it's the same resource that it is all based upon.
Yeah.
But at the downside of this, Helmut, I still end up with the same conclusion. When you think about that image, you still end up with the same conclusion, basically. How is it conveyed to the everyday Namibian? Who plays a central part? It's not just us, the media, but also how the same Namibian understands the information that exists out there. Now, I'm ending now, Helmut. Now, on the discussion specifically of what we're looking at, Namibians have to understand when they look at the communities that they live in across the country, have they seen basically new people move into their streets in their communities? Or have they seen new neighborhoods being added on to the towns or the city that they live in? Because it could be Windhoek and it could be some of the other larger towns across the country. And lastly, have new towns been brought into life? For example, you remember Verna Sinimbo's State of the Region address last year with Kavango West, where she highlighted specifically that new urban designations for some of the villages in Kavango West are earmarked in future. We don't know if it's going to happen still, but obviously this means that new jurisdictions have to be developed.
Yeah.
So that is the particular scenario that Namibians today have to look at. Because, yes, we're going to use a UN Habitat report, but there's a few particular details that you've got to keep at the back of your head, in the back of your mind, just to understand how does Namibia feature into this overall discussion. So I'm done, Helmut. You can show up there with your tennis racket and go like, it's time to smack a tennis ball. Or to smack a serve, you know.
There's one guy that pointed out something I found interesting that, you know, about capitalism. And the point he made was that if you look at capitalism today, it has slowly turned into organized crime. And I can't help but agree with that guy because...
This is under that pillar, that environmental pillar. Just read that thing. That literally speaks to agriculture.
Selected targets.
Do you see that?
Targets by 2030. There's a thin line between we are cooked and deep fried.
Then you're making us sound like a Portuguese shop. Cooked and deep.
I know, right?
You're making us sound like a Portuguese shop, but yeah. Anyway, yeah.
No, you see, the reason why I'm referencing that, and the reason why I'm inclined to agree with that guy is that it's something that I came across late last year, and also it basically it increased when a lot of ghost flights were flying into the Middle East in the early days of the Iran-US war. And one thing that it turns out there's a term in the aviation industry called ghost flights. Mm. This is when commercial planes, for the most part, just fly empty because they have more like hangar or sports arrangement at airports around the world.
Yeah.
And they have to show some kind of presence for them to maintain that spot. And as a result, you have commercial airliners that are flying empty, spewing tons of carbon dioxide and and other dangerous gases into the atmosphere. It's very environmentally unfriendly.
Mm.
Yeah. So you have the planet that's basically in the middle of coordinating to sort of like come up with strategies to save the environment, to use as less fossil fuel as possible. So, to save the environment. And at the same time, this is the biggest difference between, between theory and practice because, environmental protection laws on paper are spot on. But the practical reality is wildly different from what's on paper. And you can see the same thing with pretty much every initiative that mankind have ever put together.
Mm.
Now, why did I go straight to the aviation industry? It's simple, because that's the very same thing that you have in the housing discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a lot of countries, especially those that have political stability like ours and working towards development, housing is more of a problem that we are dealing with because we have an existing market we don't want to disturb.
True. True. Basically true.
And that's something that I realized in the early days of the Russia-Ukraine war, when a lot of Europeans, especially in the UK, discovered that there are multiple properties all around the country, especially in London, that are owned by Middle Easterners and Russians that are just laying dormant. These are properties that you could just, fix up and then, solve your housing problems. But, well, they've been bought by people that are that have, you know, that don't even live in that area.
Mm.
They have bought them, and basically, I feel like it's, for the most part, like just like any market, the housing market is being used, is used by a lot of rich people to basically hide money.
True. It's them converting money into a physical property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now one of those is an excellent way to basically avoid paying taxes, and you are back to square one, where you know with not tax evasion, which is illegal. So just a bunch of rich people figured out that instead of evading tax, just avoid it. And now avoiding it means exploiting the legal loopholes into tax codes the world over. And the interesting thing is,
down to the lawyer knowing the judge versus the lawyer knowing the law.
Now, if you look at if you go back to the Panama Papers back in 2016, Fonseca, the law firm that was used by leaders and business individuals the world over. This is just a law firm. Now, the sole job of that law firm was to create shell companies.
Yeah.
Or more like basically tax havens for everyone who is rich enough, but want to, you know, hold on to their billions. So their job was to, wherever you want to hide your money, they will create a company for you, and they will study the tax code of that country inside out.
Basically.
And use the tax, the loopholes of that particular country to create whatever, offshore heaven they can create for you.
Or advise you on which one to use.
Yeah, they will even advise you, you know what, we don't recommend you do that in this country because it is a little tricky because we've gone through them. Now, their sole job was to, they're basically like hackers, but for legislations.
Mm.
Yeah. Their job is to find exploits into legislations. Now, if you look at 2020, was that 2020, 2021?
Mm.
Yeah, when Afghan nationals found themselves through Pakistan, the UAE, through, I believe, Zambia or Zimbabwe into South Africa. The South African Ministry of Home Affairs was super pissed because now these people were brought in there by the Americans because they're the ones that were working with the Americans during their time in Afghanistan.
Mm.
You know what they were told?
Mm.
Fix your immigration laws.
Join us for the Ehangano Concert Volume 2 with Ali Tobias. Experience an unforgettable evening featuring songs from her latest album, A Bilo, performed live with a full band. Special guest appearances by Tate Buti, DA, Paige, and One Accord. All proceeds from the event will go towards supporting the Our Lady Orphanage. The event takes place on 4 July 2026 at the National Theatre of Namibia. Tickets are available on Web Tickets Namibia for 450 Namibian dollars. Don't miss this powerful night of music, inspiration, and giving back. Ehangano Concert Volume 2. See you there.
And welcome, if you just tuned in, this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, your drive time show. Now, let me just wrap up my point. So the reason why I went straight, in that detour from aviation to South Africa's immigration loopholes that were used by an American NGO to bring in Afghans. And by the way, they have another group that they want to, ship. I think those were also Afghans they want to ship to DRC. At this point, I'm going to ask myself a lot of questions about helping you.
Mm.
Because if that's how you treat people that help you after you have achieved your goal. Now, if you look at the UN Habitat's website and you look at the numbers of the people in the world that have been seen as they don't have access to housing. And the good thing is they also dive in and explain basically, in very simple language, in reference that when we are talking about housing problems, we mean including those ones that live in ghettos. You don't have a house according to UN Habitat. World Cities Report 2026, the Global Housing Crisis Pathway, Pathway to Action. That's the title of the report, which you can find on the UN Habitat website. It's public information. It's not it's not a secret.
We don't hide it, guys. Yeah. We always tell you guys where we get much of our content that comes from, except for if it's the AU declarations, resolutions, and decisions document, because it was just after you and I tried getting it on the website, remember? After I got it from the website. And then we tried going back to the website to make sure that the document is there. The document has literally been removed. So I assume every time they probably are updating something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's actually good that you...
Maybe a storage problem or something?
On a website, Hamoud? A website has its own storage. Must have its own storage. But the downside is that you would accept or assume that the AU generates enough...
Constantly, documents constantly
and
stuff updating.
Like, yeah, and that they keep it archived on the website, just like what the UN website does.
Yeah.
I mean, I found a treasure trove once again on that, on one of those UN websites. So, yeah.
Anyway, the current global housing crisis, according to UN Habitat, is the outcome of decades of insufficient investment, rapid urbanization, economic instability, and displacement caused by conflict and disaster. Now, this is where we can actually, we are somewhat very privileged or lucky because now that last part, the conflict, the displacement due to conflict or disaster.
I'm just thinking about Sudan.
We don't have to deal much about with that as a country.
And South Sudan.
Sudan.
And East DRC. And
Libya.
Libya and now Mali.
Yeah.
And who else is there?
To some degree, Northern Nigeria.
Northern Nigeria. And there was someone else, man. Hamoud. We keep forgetting about them.
I don't want to bring up Mozambique, but anyway.
Bring up Mozambique.
Now,
because that's why March and March is apparently happening. Plus Somalia. It's also the reason why March and March and Dudula are happening. But it's also the reason what Dudula and March were doing to the same immigrants. You see, they came there knowing that in South Africa, they can actually live in a decent place.
Yeah.
With sanitation and water and electricity supply.
Oh, so speaking of which. Now, the recent global estimates by the UN Habitat indicates that up to 3.4 billion people lack access to secure, safe, and adequate housing. There's an interesting description.
Out of 8 billion people, that's almost half of them.
Yeah. So, and you see, I didn't even think of it that way. Almost half of the world's population
is
basically homeless.
You should have said housing insecure.
Housing insecure. That's
euphemism.
That's that's like me saying, I'm financially deficient. Dude, you're broke. You don't have to sugarcoat it.
I'm currently liquid liquid incapacitated. Everybody goes like, you just don't have money on you.
You don't have money.
Nah, just say it. Just say it. Yeah.
But now, then they point out that let me just start it over there again. Recent global estimates indicate that up to 3.4 billion people lack access to secure, safe, and adequate housing, including more than 1 billion people living in informal settlements and slums under conditions characterized by insecure tenure, overcrowding, exposure to environmental hazards, and limited access to basic services. Almost a half of the global population are house insecure.
Yes. Now,
and that house insecurity causes a domino effect that leads into access to all the necessary services insecurity.
Now, Hamoud, let's start from another philosophic question that we've all tried to understand its particular direction. So, I've shown you now two things in DB6, basically, they speak to the same resource, but they come from two different directions.
Yeah.
Now, in the broader scheme of things, I don't know who was telling the brains trust behind NDP6 that there's a growing demand of Namibians who want to go and farm. Well, if block plus block equals unblock strategy is happening. Do you think you have petrol in your account, Helmut, to drive all the way to your farm with that petrol car?
Well, we have food insecurity is a problem that we'd like to address as part of NDP 6. So
but you're staying, but you're staying in Okahanja.
Yeah.
You are paying water and electricity in Okahanja.
Yeah.
Now I ask you again, specifically when you look at this, the needs basis, the aspect in terms of where is the greater need? The greater need speaks towards the person wants a roof over their head. Yeah. The person wants running water out of a tap in their house, and the person wants electricity supply. In order, because you now need electricity basically to do various kinds of function. The person might be a work from home person, or the person might be driving a specific sort of like MSME, a one man, one woman show, enterprise from their home. And you basically need these services, but no one will pull the line from you from Okahanja to your farm.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone will tell you, like, there literally is an article where Hage, or not an article, but there was a time that Hage said, literally, why did you decide to go and live there? That's one of the taglines of Hage that everybody, you know, Hage was known as a president for the punchlines. So he literally, there was a person who once said what was that week where Hage, in the newspapers, in the local media, it was like, literally, Hage declares war on shacks, or declares war on informal settlements. And then a person stood up there in that particular engagement and, you know, mentioned something. And then Hage was like, now who said you must go and live there?
Mm-hmm.
So far away from the services, so far away from where the local authority must bring you the service, the water and the electricity. Now, if you search it, Helmut, it's the one under Hage declares war on shacks.
No, if you are talking about places like Windhoek, we have a lot of people that are commuting from Okahanja, mostly Okahanja and Rehoboth.
Mm.
Now it doesn't take a rocket scientist to ask themselves why would someone live in Okahanja, because I don't think people commute for fun.
No,
it's an affordability component.
And plus people commute out of necessity.
Yeah.
The first affordability, and you're right, the first affordability dimension comes from housing.
Yeah.
There's a story, because my sister now also moved back to Rehoboth. She tells me that there is a little bit of a property boom happening. And I say property boom because it literally means that the local inhabitants of Rehoboth realize that there's a whole bunch of Windhoekers
mm-hmm.
moving from Windhoek, relocating from Windhoek to Rehoboth.
Yeah.
And rather investing money in a daily transport commuting from Rehoboth to Windhoek, because Windhoek is becoming unaffordable for Windhoek residents.
By the day.
By the day. Not even by the month, by the day. So it's becoming unaffordable for the, let's rather say, the ordinary person, which means and translates to the average Windhoek resident.
Yeah.
So if you see such a particular market dynamic happening in terms of, you now go to towns like Okahanja and Rehoboth, and just before Okahanja, you've got the Osona property development project where Windhoekers are investing, people working in Windhoek, mm-hmm. investing in those property markets, and no longer investing in Windhoek. It obviously should tell the Windhoek City Council there's a major issue in terms of, firstly, affordable residential properties.
Yeah.
Okay, but I'm slightly straying from the point. The other dynamic was literally the market boom that I was explaining, or my sister explained. It said, Dwight, the local inhabitants in these towns are not sleeping on their laurels. Helmut, it's like the most, I mean, you would even go like, but there's no service connected to the piece of land. But then they want to ask you for like exorbitant prices. And you go like, where do you guys get these prices?
I think I'm with the numbers.
Where do you guys get these? But the guys, they're literally selling the land. Now, remember back to Minister Sangwasa's talking point at the inauguration or the swearing-in ceremony of those councillors in Rundu,
mm-hmm.
where he said, the one where he highlighted the particular story about the one council or the town council that wanted to go for the sports event in South Africa, and they didn't have money at the end of the month to pay for salaries. Now, in that same particular address, remember that a little bit earlier, he also highlighted that one of his particular goals would be to put like a freeze on town councils selling land at certain particular price levels. Now, that obviously speaks towards a weird, I call it a weird dynamic, because here is the dilemma. If you own the land, Helmut, it's on your name. Title deed on your name. Mm-hmm. It says Helmut, whatever, Mahongo. Sorry for the whatever, Helmut. I know whatever is not on your, it's not on your birth certificate. I'm sorry. I'm apologizing. But, you know, it stands there, literally.
Yeah, it's Mahongo times two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's put back the whatever. That's a placeholder. So
yeah.
that's on your title deed of the property you own because you bought it, ne? From the town council.
Yeah.
Now the downside is literally you're a private individual. You're not a company, you're not an enterprise. You're not a rapidly inflating prices, or you're not causing a rapid price inflation in a local economy for properties. What you're doing is you're holding on a piece of asset, which is advisable by even any financial advisor in any part of the world. They'll tell you, put your money in land,
mm-hmm.
in residential, urban land. Now you've done that. So now you sit with an asset you can quickly convert into money because you converted money into land. Now you can convert land back into money. So what you'll do, Helmut? You'll literally then look at trends, population trends happening. And what's the current best one working in your favor? Is a whole bunch of Windhoekers selling their properties in Windhoek to move back to Rehoboth or to Okahania or to Osona or to Gobabis even.
Yeah.
I don't know why people are not buying properties in Witvlei, because Witvlei is a lot closer than Gobabis. Witvlei is on the way to Gobabis. Yeah. I don't know why people are not doing that, because Witvlei is a little town, a village council as well. Now you've got that property boom and property spike happening. So if you're a resident of any of these towns who owns that open erf, what will you do, Helmut? If you bought that erf for $1,000, you will definitely times 100 multiply that $1,000. It's just an example, guys. It's not a factual number I'm giving you. You literally convert that to times 100,000 because you want 100,000 profit. There is no law against you profiteering from your private property that you lawfully bought.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was... Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm. Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short. Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Five o'clock on the dot.
Yeah. Dwight. So just me finalizing that point.
Yeah.
You, Helmut, as a private property owner, you would literally convert that property back into the maximum profit, your return on investment. You would mint it and you would be singing to the bank every day. You would do it.
Yeah, I'll be singing to the bank every day for about a week. Then, Nami Brewery will be singing to the bank.
No, we're not asking for your character weaknesses, doch man. That's not what we're asking for.
That's yet. A Namibia character weakness, not just me. But
how many beers do you want to drink?
What?
Let's for example say you sell a property that you're sitting with there in Divundune.
Mm.
It's also just an example, guys.
Yeah, just an example before someone starts investigating if I have a rupa. And I exchange it for land.
Anyway, so let's say you sell with a property, a property you own.
Yeah.
They're in the town council of Divundu.
Yeah.
And you realize there's a whole bunch of Rundu inhabitants moving to Divundu for one or other particular economic type, development. That's positive. That speaks to a positive for you. The first thing you will do, Helmut, is you will look to convert that property as ASAP, as soon as possible, into money. Why? Because there will be someone wanting to buy into Divundu, build their own little house situation, and boom, pops your uncle. Helmut is singing to the bank. Now, I ask you, Helmut, let's say you sold that property for $300,000,
yeah.
And it's a 1,000 square meter property. You sold it for 300,000. Helmut, how many beers do you think you want to be buying after week one from looking at the bank balance? You won't, because you will know what to do. You'll buy the next property. Ne? I assume so, ne?
Yeah, let's go with
you
that.
You won't be supporting the stock exchange, the Namibia Stock Exchange investment, you know, situation there of a beer brewing company, ne?
When that comes in, yeah. No, great stock exchange. Okay, you know what? I tried.
What? Great stock exchange? I mean, even our camera guys laugh.
Right.
We try to be professional all the time, guys. We are professional.
Hey,
don't worry.
We are professional.
We are professional.
Very professional.
But there's always shots being fired.
They're not shots, man. They're just descriptions.
That's true. That's true.
One thing that I want to develop a tendency of trying to bring everything home, especially when it comes to information coming out of reports that are done on a global level.
Mm.
Yeah, like being an African, I always want to look at it from an African perspective. So when we are talking about housing on a global level, and we're doing all these numbers about this is how much, you know, 3 point something billion people, nearly 4 billion people, don't have access to, you know, to housing. So how are we defining the word house here? Because if you go to a lot of African communities and you'll find someone deep in the village in their mud house and you ask them whether they have a house or not, they'll tell you, yes, I have a house and there is my house.
Mm.
Yeah. And
and they are not wrong.
Yeah, they are not wrong.
They're not wrong.
So how are we defining the word house here? Because if we are defining it by Western standards of just strictly brick and mortar, then there's the numbers a little bit skew.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not just that. And one thing that I've come to learn is that if you look at the population and housing census by the NSA from 2023, they also looked at,
If you read that line, né, which shows you the duplication.
Goal description and policy intent.
Yeah. Just the line below it, the one that ends with rural tenure.
Okay. The sub goal aims to create inclusive and sustainable human settlement by mainly unlocking housing opportunities. And you're looking at spatial planning, serviced land with basic services and security of tenure for both urban and rural residents. Now, let me take you to page 63. Page 63 of the of our population and housing census. Page 63, a type of housing. Type of housing. And this is what it says. 2023 population and housing census defined 11 categories of housing units. Formal dwelling / house with brick and concrete structure on separate stands of farms. Traditional dwelling made of traditional materials. Flats or apartments in blocks of flats. Cluster housing in complexes. Townhouses, semi-detached houses in complexes, semi-detached houses, and you have formal dwellings or additional units in backyards. Now, that's becoming pretty much standard in Windhoek, if not the whole Namibia. And you have informal dwelling / shacks in backyards. And you have informal dwelling / shacks not in the backyards, such as in the informal / squatter settlement or on farms. And you have caravans or tents and single quarters. So a house itself is, at least according to the Namibian Statistics Agency, where they based this housing statistics on,
yeah,
is a very broad one.
Yeah.
they tried as much as possible to cover, and that's where the question or the question now came from. One, I asked the UN Habitat statistics. So when you're looking at housing on a global level, and you're saying this number of people have access to house, this number of people have houses. So we first have to at least as a continent, as a developing country, or as a continent just filled with developing countries, we have to ask ourselves, when we talk about housing, what constitutes a house? What definition are we using? Are we using just strictly brick and mortar, or we are expanding it to encompass traditional dwellings?
And definitely.
Well, the good thing for us is, as soon as I asked myself that question, that's when I was like, you know what, I want to understand how we are defining this as a country. When we say a housing, what do we mean? And it turns out the NSA's definition of housing is a very broad one.
Okay, what does it say there? Say again quickly.
So so type of housing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now a type of housing. The 2023 population and housing census defined 11 categories of housing units.
Serious? 11?
Yeah. Okay. 11 categories of of housing units.
Okay. Now, the human settlement situational analysis in NDP6. Listen to this description. So, the Namibian government has identified land and housing provision as one of its priority areas.
Yeah.
Namibia is committed to the principles of adequate shelter for all and promotion of sustainable human settlement development. Human settlement is defined as the totality of the human community, city, town, or village, with all social, material, organizational, spiritual, and cultural elements that sustain it.
Spiritual.
But it doesn't say where it derives this description from. Whose description is this? Did Namibia adopt this description? Because it basically then means a shack would then fall under this. Current situation would comply with this. Here's the next thing. The next point, the next fact I want to point out.
Mm-hmm.
No mention. And Helmut, you can just for our audience digitally online, you can even fact check for me. You will not find 300,000 housing backlog there. You will not find the statistical reference to the 300,000 housing backlog in NDB6's human settlement under the Pillar 3, that blue pillar, for human development and human development. You will not find the housing backlog reference there. I am glad, firstly and foremost, when the planning went into the formulation of NDB6, what I'd like to know is, what is the current situation? Where is the housing backlog at? Because NDP6 literally does not acknowledge the existence of the stock of that that statistic of that of the 300,000, which then brings us back to narrative. So the previous presidencies had to support and maintain a 300,000 narrative.
Mm-hmm.
We get into the new presidency of the 8th administration. Now we have to think past 300,000, or we have to, what is that word? You have to visualize yourself having transcended past a specific point in somewhere in human history. But here's what they just say. The aim is to develop, what is the goals? The aim is to increase serviced plots from 25,000 to 50,000 by 2030, and for new houses to be constructed from 12,500 to 55,000. Now we have to ask the question, Helmut. Yeah, so how many people are there with an affordable housing need in the country? Because once again, the targets don't speak about a need. We are just stating something. We are going to blindly build to 50,000. We are blindly going to clear land for 50,000 properties. Yeah, but how many people have a need? This document doesn't say anything.
How many people have housing needs? Oh,
Even though you and I identified also from the NSA document about the expanding household collection.
Yeah.
But it's also, once again, you don't know how many people have a housing need. A household doesn't say the house. It doesn't say the house. Guys, literally, yeah. Speaking to you guys, our audience.
Now, you see, the population and housing census is from 2023, right?
Yeah.
But this is what it has based on the 11 definitions of, basically 11 descriptions of what constitutes a house. Now, so there's a whole list of them, but then then they point out that now the table on the next page shows shows that 28.7% of households in Namibia are informal dwelling or shacks, of which 40.2% are in urban areas. So the largest informal dwellings in urban areas. That's not rocket science. And now the question I ask myself is, so they say informal dwelling at the village. How do you even describe that?
But here's the thing. If the village is identified as a village, mm-hmm. which is a collection of different households, not the houses they live in, mm-hmm. in the village,
yeah.
different households basically constituting this particular
community.
Village, this community. How then do you go and say, because you've got a village hut, that is not an adequate dwelling. But when you come to Windhoek, now the same material used back there
mm-hmm.
to build said particular structure
mm-hmm.
is not identified in Windhoek. Now you get reclassified as, yeah, that's just a gehuggie, like we say in Afrikaans, a gehuggie.
I was going to go with geesless, but I thought it was enough.
Huis Lewis. Or as we say, Dark Lewis.
Like, that's like homeless.
Darkless, like roofless.
Oh, roofless.
Dark Lewis, roofless. But instead of saying homeless, we say Dark Lewis.
I mean, at least, you know, the Afrikaans one has some nice ring to it. Like, you could be having a wall, but the only problem, you don't have a roof.
Oh, there's a more longer description saying, Eidopi Straat, Obi Vlak.
And, Edwana?
Eidopi Straat.
Yeah, I won't even attempt that.
I mean, it's basics, Helmut, but I understand. You know, even the Prime Minister beats you, Helmut. At speaking Afrikaans, you know. He literally sounds like you. Do you know that?
That Afrikaans has a Herero accent.
But why are you trying to...
You get so much more with the ShopRite price. Because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 4kg real good chicken frozen mixed portions for 209 Namibian dollars 99. 6x1 liter clover full cream or low fat milk UHT process for only 136 Namibian dollars 99 per pack. And 3kg right brand macaroni for a low 62 Namibian dollars 99. Deals valid until 5 July 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Welcome back. We continue just 15 minutes into the hour of five. You're still listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Your drive time duo on your drive time show. Now, my favorite part that I seem to have skipped when I was going through this report, when this NSA population and housing census report, when it came out, was the, page 68 talks about the, not the average number of rooms. I don't want to dwell my, 7.4, materials used for the outer wall, floor, and roof in all these 11 categories. Now,
please shock me, Hamid. Yeah. Please shock me.
The section presents information on the material used to construct walls, floor, and roofs, which are important indicators of socioeconomic conditions and welfare of households. And then there's a table that basically shows that 44.1, yeah, there's a table below that that shows that 44.1% of households in Namibia reside in dwellings with walls made from cement blocks slash bricks or stones. I saw a lot of that in Sumkwa, you know, houses made out of stones. And in urban areas, households that that used cement slash bricks constituted 53.1% for outer walls were the highest, followed by corrugated iron slash zinc, aka Silver City, 37.2% households. And this was a trend observed in rural areas with 33.3% and 32.1% and 32.1%. Moreover, corrugated iron and slash zinc was found to be the highest at the regional level in Omaheke and Commerce with 56.4% and 48.2% respectively. One thing that I, one of the reasons why I emphasize that is I've come to learn in a lot of rural areas, the zinc or corrugated iron houses are increasing. Mm. Yeah, so it's an informal structure. Now, that's where the description now is it's going to be if it's not ready confusing. So if you are describing the traditional mud house dwelling as formal, at least that's how I like to describe it in village settings. Mm. Yeah, if it is formal in village settings, and if you bring it here, and I don't think City of Windhoek will even listen to you talking about but that particular building material here.
But you know what's the funny thing?
Yeah.
It is now in the architecture realm, and even sort of like at the UN level, it's now being advised specifically that countries and societies have to go back to indigenous knowledge sets. Now, one of the key things is specifically there are these existing sort of like pieces of legislation that say you may not build in Windhoek with a mud brick.
Yeah.
Now, how do you sit with such a dilemma? You were still saying, Hamoud, on your point.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, the zinc and corrugated iron houses are making it to the village, and they are now in competition in terms of go-to construction materials for dwellings with mud houses. So I think that number is only going to increase. And by that number, I mean the number of houses that will be built in village settings with corrugated iron sheets. Mm. So are they going to be formal or informal in the rural areas? Are they going to be formal in rural areas, or they are going to remain informal as they are in urban areas? That would be something very interesting to observe with time. Now, one question that brings up is one of services.
Mm.
Yeah, because when you're talking about, I think that's the most interesting part about us having to have basically a discussion around alternative building materials, because you and I know, or at least everyone that has seen a mud house knows that you will have to overhaul the construction method for you to put a bathroom and a kitchen in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, when you're talking about servicing for easy access to water and electricity and ablution facilities in one structure, in the same way that you find in a brick and mortar house, it's difficult to pull that off in a corrugated iron house, because one short circuit and the whole thing becomes becomes a death trap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if a live wire gets into contact with an iron, with a zinc house, while touching the wall of your house instantly turns you into Michael Jackson, and we don't want that.
Mm.
So when you're talking about servicing, access to service in terms of water and electricity connectivity to your structure, I think this is where we are ever stuck with brick and mortar as the most efficient material, because you don't want to constantly call the plumber to come and fix something every time that there's a flood and your house gets washed away. It also becomes very dangerous because water plus electricity, not a good idea. So if you want a dwelling that will have the proper and actually high quality water and electricity connection, you need durable material.
Yeah.
So in this case, mud and zinc is not going to cut it. It's not going to cut it. What you now need is that basically brings us back to square one with regards to the alternative building material.
Yeah.
Now, if iron, zinc, is not a good idea, because we are basically surrounded by high electricity conductivity. And you have mud, and mud is just another discussion that is not going to be a very good one, if you are talking about electricity and water connectivity. So,
actually, you can make it work
With mud or zinc.
With mud.
Yeah. Okay. How?
But the concern is sometimes when you look at like layout and design, the approved plans, obviously of construction and stuff like that. You would have to firstly go and identify the resource. Where are you going to get the mud from to make the mud bricks with? Because that's the first resource you would need. I'm quickly looking up here because, while you were highlighting that, my train of thought went into, what did the Romans live in? And the Romans lived in a domus. And the Romans didn't have glass for windows.
Yeah.
They didn't have glass, at that stage readily available because it was glass making was apparently, in a infancy stage, which is part of the industrial methods. And the way they designed homes even then also spoke of the level where you are in society. Were you from a rich family or from an elite or from a whatever? And some of the discussions even was based on what you sometimes see is that how the layout sometimes also worked. Now, I wanted to basically look at materials used. But obviously, since I mentioned the word indigenous materials or indigenous knowledge associated to construction materials, you will immediately then go with, but there are mud houses still standing today in Namibia for so long after how many years? Still today. Then you go with, okay, so mud works. Now you go look at what would your town council approve as a feasible construction resource. What would they approve? Would your town council even approve with that radical idea that I found on the internet about using containers to build a house? Because a container is easier, Hamid. You just need to have the money. You just buy your two containers, you put down your small house idea.
Yeah.
And then you just basically put in the padding on the inside for insulation and for the piping and for the electronics and install the stuff and then install the water basin, the kitchen basin there and the toilet and ablution facilities on one side, and Bob's your uncle. Voila, there you go. You've got a dwelling within 2 weeks. You've got a dwelling to live in. And like the guy that I once bumped into from a local company in Namibia, he explained, if you look at Namibia's weather, now on average, if you look it up, Helmut, a container house can last you 25 to 35 years. But that guy explained, that's in northern hemisphere wet climate conditions. If it's in Namibia with its dry climate, you're looking at a lifetime. You're looking at a lifetime, Helmut.
Okay, look, the thing is, with the right insulations, and there are a lot of different insulation methods out there. I think shipping containers would do.
In Namibia?
Yep.
Like that. But here's the thing.
You need approval.
Who would allow it? Which town council would allow it? Because you can have all the wonderful architectural ideas. You can follow. There's so many architectural ideas from South Africa about small houses. It's like a new trend that architects want to push in terms of sustainable housing. But here's the thing: the architect goes and builds a what do they call that? Those demonstration houses. What do they call those things, man? They go build the template house, ne? They go put it up somewhere in the bush on someone's farm, not constructing it like in the town council, within the limits of the city or within the limits of the town, within its borders. They go build it somewhere there out in the bush. Then it looks to you, the Namibian who wants a need, who has a need, as, okay, so you're telling me to go live out in the bush with the baboons, the leopards, the lions, the V16 reverse parking experts, and, you know, and the meerkatte and all that stuff. You want me to go live there with wildlife? I'm looking at a urban solution for urban needs. Now, that particular direction now also now means what kind of property will you sell? The size of the earth. For example, if you look up internationally the description that exists in terms of how much space do people actually need? Living space, personal living space.
Yeah.
How much space do people actually need? Then you realize that an erf plus the dwelling, you don't need 1,000 square meters, in essence. You don't need that much land, Helmut. Just to live, because you know you're going to go work during the day, you come back home, you just want to chill, kick back, and, you know, just rest your feet. And you just want a space, probably if you have a car, to park your car in your property, and that's it. You're not looking for a kingdom. You're also not asking to start a new civilization.
Look, in reports, that's one thing that I actually find somewhat very annoying about a bunch of these reports. They just don't deal, you know, we don't want to face the reality on the reality on the table here. And I really, I mean, I totally understand why the reality is difficult to face, and because it's difficult to investigate. A lot of money in the world is hiding in properties.
Yeah, definitely.
It's hiding in properties. And that is contributing to the prices going through the roof.
Definitely.
And that is one of the major contributing factors why an average income earner cannot afford one.
Definitely. Yeah. If you go now to Swakopmund.
Yeah.
Swakopmund that looks the way Swakopmund does. Half planned, half organized. The only thing that makes it complete. I know, guys. I have a personal vendetta against Swakop. Just so that I can.
I thought it was just Valvis.
It's both. You know, it's actually both towns. You know. Helmut, for literally sitting at a resource that literally defines tourism there.
Yeah.
These two towns are doing the bare minimum in terms of actually looking the touristy part.
The touristy part.
Literally. They're doing the bare minimum. How much do you know that? Oh, ad break, guys.
On the other side of the break. Stay tuned.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We continue where we left off with, Homeran discussion, and we're looking at the global housing crisis, as the UN Habitat describes it. And it is a crisis. And I can't help but maintain that it's a crisis with an obvious solution.
Yeah. Very.
Yeah. It's a crisis with an obvious solution.
Yeah.
But it's kind of difficult to face because I think we'd rather beat around the bush than just face the reality that we don't have a shortage problem. We have an accessibility problem.
It's literally like the malnutrition thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing with the malnutrition problem. If you find yourself in an urban area, for example, and you don't have money to buy food, you're gonna starve, not because there is no food around you. There is a lot of food around you.
Mm.
Yeah.
If you okay, it's either you get arrested, or you get beaten up, or you starve.
Yeah, just these three.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, as you can imagine, survival instinct kicks in, and they choose to be arrested.
Obviously, after having eaten.
Hopefully. Yeah, I mean, it would be weird to be arrested after not having eaten, because now you're hungry and now
and beaten up.
Yeah. Call it it's a little unorthodox, but
hopefully.
Yeah.
Not that we are condoning criminal activity.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
We're just saying, if you want to be Sarah, be Sarah.
Now when we look at housing, for example, we can have an alternative building, an alternative building material. It will help a lot in this discussion.
Yeah.
But then again, that's one of the reasons why I'm maintaining it's a problem with an obvious solution. We don't want to we just don't want to look at the solution because there is a lot of money buried in properties that already exist. It's a multi-trillion dollar, a billion, if not trillion dollar worldwide market.
Mm.
Yeah. A lot of people just, put their money in. And because it's a very secure way of, of saving money. But the thing is, again, it's not illegal. I'm just saying by us not talking about that part of the problem, by us just making it sound like the expansion of informal settlement is organic or something that's not preventable. It is preventable. And is it Morocco that you like to use as an example that they are, their equivalent of informal settlement? Take, for example, the lowest, that's Tunisia.
Yeah. But even Morocco, even Algeria, if you go look up informal settlements in those countries, you will see the people have a built structure. It's not the thing that you highlighted about the corrugated iron or the zinc structures, which technically are informal because they can be taken off and moved somewhere else.
Look, the thing is, if for a government that wants to maximize service provision, that's impossible to do. You can't connect water and electricity to a shack.
You technically can, but you can't because the shack can be disassembled and moved somewhere else.
And it can catch fire.
That too, yeah.
And it can be washed away by the flood. And we have seen this.
Yeah.
So even despite all these problems, and this is the interesting part about having this discussion from an African and even Namibian standpoint.
Mm.
In much of the areas that's in the inland, basically far away from coastal areas, your problem will most of the informal structures are made with zinc.
Mm.
But if you look at coastal areas are even the most affected by the lack of a discussion of alternative building materials. And I'm pointing that out because you can't use zinc at coastal areas. That thing is gonna rust really fast.
No, even the suggestion about container yeah. container homes.
Yeah, that would be a bad idea.
It basically then you actually meet the 25-year time frame. Yeah. You actually justify the 25-year time frame.
Yeah, so as a result, what do coastal areas substitute for zinc? Wood, and it's flammable.
Yeah, and wood has most of the other thing where because of the exposure to moisture,
it soaks.
Yeah, it becomes soggy and
becomes basically spongy.
Yeah, and it starts splintering.
Yeah,
and that's most the other thing. That's most why they use tar poles.
Yeah,
specifically,
and tar is flammable.
It seems like clay is the best option, but clay can wash away. But sometimes it's difficult for clay to wash away. But still, when you look at this discussion, you know, even doing steel structuring, steel
framing,
steel frame construction, because steel framing is basically you just build the frame, and it's like what's that thing that I explained to you, the prefabricated homes,
yeah.
It's like steel frame construction is like prefabricated homes. So the only thing that gets built is the frame of the structure.
Yeah.
Now imagine you're just using wood to make the frame.
Yeah.
But you're using corrugated iron basically to fill in where the gaps are, like the roof, the walls, the windows, and then you put your window in.
Yeah.
Now it's the same for steel frame construction. Now, at the one time in 2016, there's a local company here in Windhoek somewhere. I went and looked at, they obviously highlighted, you know, primarily to be showcased in something. So I went and looked at what they basically do in their warehouse, in their workshop. And it's a massive machine helmet. And all that needs to be, all that, it's a machine like this wall from where you're sitting with the camera standing to that wall out there in the studio. It's like a 10 meter. Yeah, it's basically, this is basically 10 meters, this wall. Yeah. So the machine, what the machine does, ne, is the machine reads the plans that were designed by the design department, ne, and then it basically just bends the steel structure to the specifications of the plan. So it's basically like automation.
So they first need the plans.
Yeah.
So they can basically build it custom to that particular plan.
To that particular person's needs. Yeah. Now, if you look at a situation like that, a home under that scenario could be built, a house could be built, literally, within 2 weeks. I'll say it again. It can be built within 2 weeks. The same to even for the container house template. But here's the scenario. It's also not conducive, for example, to the
coastal areas.
Coastal climate. It's not. Hence, probably one of the reasons why brick and mortar works at coastal zones.
Yeah, well, in that case, then you can just leave brick and mortar for coastal areas.
But you want standardization.
Standardization.
And when we looked at standardization in economy, what does standardization provide for? It actually provides the aspect to make money from. Because if that guy builds with container houses and this guy builds with brick and mortar and that guy's on clay and this guy's on steel frame construction, it just looks like a mess everywhere.
Even if you want to standardize, I don't think you're going to standardize with steel framing in coastal areas. That's not a good idea.
Yeah.
You'll have to find an alternative building material that is suitable for that environment. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a house that won't last very long.
Yeah. So it's on that particular sort of like scaling that you've got to look at the nuances as well. But here's the thing also. That's also part of the discussion taking place in Namibia about standardizing construction methods.
Oh, okay. It's kind of difficult to standardize because if you look at, I didn't read it in detail, but finding out that we have, we have like 11 different ways of making a house.
True.
Yeah.
True. And also,
but I think the standard recommended one would be brick and mortar, which I totally understand because of its rigidity in terms of the structure and easy to basically fit in all the needs that a house must contain, like your plumbing and your electrical wiring.
Yeah.
You need all that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of difficult to retrofit on your shark and all that.
Yeah. So, and remember, this is only one thing for a human household, for a human need.
Yeah.
It's just one thing. There's still things like having a street there, having a transport system, having, you know, refuse removal, street sweepers, you know, all those particular things.
Yeah.
That's just the starting block of starting from adequate housing. Oh, I remember this. Do you remember the story, Hamel, that I told you once about the lady that I sometimes interview about the hemp and cannabis trade discussions in mm-hmm. terms of, you know, what lost opportunities in Namibia are facing? What's her name? Angela Prisa.
Missing out on the hemp.
Yeah, if we reclassify,
yeah.
You know, the particular plant itself. So I interviewed her once when she herself on her social media pages highlighted she went to visit in the UK an initiative, which is basically an NGO, that built a house out of hemp. Now, hemp, dear listeners, mm-hmm. is the sister plant of the other cannabis plant, the one that you guys love partying on. But hemp is the other one that has its overall industrial applications.
Yeah,
you can make clothes out of it. You can make industrial products out of it. And you can make you know, various other things out of it. Now, the thing with hemp is it literally that hemp apparently is also suitable for construction.
For literally, I can only imagine how much of it you need.
Well, when I read the particular thing at the time, they were just promoting sort of like building this first sort of like template house somewhere in a rural community in the UK. And I was like, okay, wonderful. You know, in very wet and cold and damp climate, it probably looks good there. I just don't want to imagine if you bring that kind of a template to Namibia, whose house will literally turn into like dried out weeds. Not the other one, you know, like grass out there in the bush.
Unwanted plants.
Yeah. The unwanted plants. So whose house would look like dried out? Yeah, basically like, what's that grazing grass for cattle?
Like hay.
Yeah, like hay. Whose house, who likes it when the house looks like hay, basically? And probably very flammable at the time.
Yeah, you'll also need a lot of insulations, because otherwise then it's
outside and inside.
Outside and inside.
Just imagine if someone just stands with a magnifying glass outside. Yeah. It'll be a severe tragedy. Yeah, we know. But yeah.
Oh man.
Opportunities abound.
There are flock cameras that are facing some serious issues in the US. These are basically public safety surveillance cameras that are just installed all across the country. And a few months ago, some guy figured out that, you know, they don't have, they are not that secure when it comes to hacking. So that people were basically getting arrested for using those cameras to track down their ex-girlfriends. Yeah, I know. Which is just something else. Now among other things, just people don't like being watched because they like their privacy, and privacy and security don't go, you know, they don't go parallel to one another.
Mm.
Yeah, where you have maximum security, privacy is more often out through the window, and where you have maximum privacy, security is somewhat questionable. So they started now one of the biggest problem now, the American government and the company that installs and maintains the camera. One thing that they are facing is that a lot of people decided they somehow figured out, a way to basically blind or even disable the cameras.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's becoming a serious problem. Now, the police officers are saying this is a good thing. You know, it helps them do their job properly. Mm. But a lot of people are looking at that as an invasion of their privacy.
Which it is.
Yeah, it is. Both arguments are actually excellent arguments to make. As a police officer, it makes it easy for them to track suspects because they can just track them using those cameras, and it works. For a lot of people, they are just looking at that as an invasion of their privacy, and it's also very dangerous to that invasion of that privacy. As you can imagine, a lot of those ex-girlfriends that were tracked down using those cameras can make that argument, and it would be a valid one.
Mm.
Everything that we are going to make, everything that we are going to make is going to have pros and cons. I think in life, everything is about just pick your poison.
Yeah,
that's it. So whether and take just
pick
take
your poison.
Yeah, just pick your poison. Pick your poison.
Okay.
Yeah. Everyone wants a hot girlfriend with big milky white eyes until they find out. More often they are blind. Those eyes don't work. Now, ladies, don't wait for me at the gate. Now, big milky white eyes.
You had to choose the most innocent feature of a woman. You went for her eyes. Okay.
Most innocent. Look, I'm practicing for Friday. I would have gone for something different.
I don't know what's happening Friday.
Hmm?
Must be not asking.
No, it's a surprise.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it's a surprise.
Yeah. So, when it comes to housing issues,
yeah.
Especially in countries like Namibia, we have a housing issue. Everyone knows that, but we don't want to have an alternative building material discussion because of the standardization discussion. And the mere fact that there's a lot of money buried in property market and a lot of people, if I had millions of my dollars in the property market, the last thing I want is someone coming up with alternative building material, because that will just make the products readily available. And you know what happens to the price when that happens?
Oop.
Yep.
Starts dipping.
So that is, until we have a discussion around, how the real estate market is very lucrative, we are not having an honest discussion about the housing market.
No, we're not.
We're not. So we'll just be beating around the bush. And one fascinating thing is I came to realize that we are basically doing the exact same thing even on a UN level. We're just talking about, this is how many people need houses. We know that. This is how many people need access to housing. Yes, we know that. And this is the ever increasing price of the housing market. Everyone knows that.
Mm.
What is the solution? Well, the solution is we have to invest more into the already unaffordable building material.
Yeah.
And they are subsidized housing, like what's being, in parts of Deben, like what's being referenced into, what's being referenced by that UN report. But these are now affordable housing. Excellent. They have financial backing from your commercial banks. Excellent. But when you look at the requirements of accessing those loans, brings us back to that point you keep making, which also made headlines a couple of weeks ago. It's much easier for you to get a loan for $1 million car than to get a loan for $1 million house.
Oh, and you have to jump through hoops for that house. Oh, Helmut. Do you know what's the worst thing of... Do you know what's the saddest thing of Namibia's property market? You have to be married. That is the saddest thing.
One more time.
You have to be married. A dual income household, meaning two people.
Works much better.
Not just that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it does work better. But a dual income household has the ability that one of the incomes can literally...
cannot afford.
Take the blow of the installment per month, the payback amount per month on the home loan.
Yeah.
And the second one looks after all other responsibilities.
Oh, yeah.
Like covering the, covering like expenses to be paid and, you know, other smaller loans and responsibilities.
You know, your food, water, electricity.
All those particular things, yeah. So the reality in Namibia is, to if you're going to become a new homeowner, one of the saddest things usually is you, the best scenario for you to be in is to be a married couple.
I should become specifically. I should, now that you point that out, I think I should become a divorce lawyer because, oh, well, y'all are, now, how is the property dispute
going to look like
seeing that in the environment where we have that type of economic corner being caught up in and also skyrocketing divorce rates?
So when you look at the current climate, which feeds into this discussion of if, because the report mentions affordability as one of the things, but then they go in and expand a little bit more on the climate related pressures that come about, but not expanding. Obviously, they expand a little bit later in the report about affordability, but affordability is the main feature regarding accessibility to affordable housing,
affordable food,
affordable land, and the ability to live into the future, which always brings you back to when you do a comparison exercise with like your parents or your grandparents. Then you start literally becoming annoyed with what seems to you or translates to you how easy it was for them to get land and property.
Yeah.
Remember that example I keep using of my uncle? 300 rand, Hamud. Imagine being paid 300 Namibian dollars today in under today's current financial climate.
No.
Which Namibian, literally, you will literally have a liberation struggle happening because a person is being paid 300 bucks a month.
That's lunch.
True. That's even under UN designation, the universal bread line.
You know, I've done the math. There's my favorite, Asian eating establishment just across the road.
Yeah.
You know,
the Thai place.
Yeah, Nelson Mandela. Yeah, the Thai place.
How do their food taste?
It's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, look, the thing is,
I've had Korean and Chinese only. And Indian.
I think I have an Asian food thing because I've had all of them.
I'm now jealous.
Did I tell you a story about how I was dragged to? Yeah, actually one of our listeners.
Mm.
Yeah, one of our listeners. Works in Spain, but he's Namibian. Mm. So I flew into the country this other time and dragged a chicken and I to Yangtze. Mm. Eish.
To Yellow River.
Yeah, you should have watched. How to put this? It turns out, Kavango plus chopsticks, terrible idea. And
some days, I get it, how to use the chopsticks. Yeah. Other days, I'm just like, aish, brah, Dwight.
I have the thing is, I can use chopsticks now. I've mastered it. But believe me when I tell you, I was so terrible.
Yeah.
Our waitress had to give me like chopsticks to go and practice. She was laughing her lungs out.
You waitresses, you guys must stop now making jokes of us.
So it's about 300 bucks. 300 bucks, that's lunch. That's lunch.
Mm. That's, and that can feed like 4 people.
Yep.
Yeah. True.
But if you are, if you are eating, fat cakes and in Tura, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, you can feed the whole street.
Oof, yeah. You know, that's one thing I like about that place. You just get out of the house. There is, $5, $3, in just 100 bucks, you are good for the day. and someone made a living out of that back then.
Yeah.
Got married, bought a house, a car.
Had a newly born baby, had a house, could buy a car, paid for expenses, still had money to save, still had money to spend, and that was what it looked like every year, every month.
Okay. Yeah, no, don't try that now. Not just from 300. Don't try that with 3,000.
It's not even about you telling them not to try. It's a question even of, is it possible even?
It's impossible. Are you kidding?
Yeah, that is true. But before we continue, we've got a live read.
Yeah.
Vavitcha University's NQA approval for expansion of scope. Vavitcha University is pleased to inform all stakeholders that the Namibia Qualifications Authority, the NQA Council, has approved our application for expansion of scope. This approval grants accreditation for the following NQF registered qualifications offered through full-time blended learning mode at our university. These are the Bachelor of Laws Honours, the Bachelor of Education in Senior in Secondary Education Honours, the Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, the Bachelor of Social Work Honours, and the Diploma in Legal Studies, Level 6. Vavitcha University, where everyone is an achiever.
So, yes, housing is a problem, both in Namibia and globally. But there is one part of the housing shortage we are not having. It's a lucrative market that's hiding billions, if not trillions of dollars, and we don't want to touch it because most likely if you do that on a global level, it is bound to have a cascading global economic problems.
Yeah.
And the excellent example, 2008 financial crisis, that bubble that busted, it was in the housing market.
Basically, yes. And it was directed to people who...
What?
Didn't have homes.
Yeah.
And suddenly they could get homes. And suddenly there was a stimulation happening.
Except there were trips.
But now the stimulation was dependent upon, okay, now pay back the money we borrowed you.
Yeah. No, look, I think the 2008 financial crisis is proof that, we need to look into alternative building material.
Yeah.
Because the houses that were supplied, especially in the American property market, prior to 2008, they were of the standard building material. That means they didn't want to change the building material because they would have changed also the price and everything.
Mm.
But so the thing is, the price remained the same. It was unaffordable. They just worked out a way to make it somewhat affordable.
To look affordable.
Yeah, affordable.
It's more like the Chase Bank.
JP Morgan Chase.
Infinity Money.
Infinity Money glitch.
And all they did, ne, was that they wrote on a check, go cash the check into the account, and then literally they just withdrawing money. Now, how do you write a check to yourself, telling your bank to pay you from yourself, Helmut? How in the world, how do...
Now, that's why I started with the point earlier on.
When it was explained to me, I was like, how did they get here?
I mean, well, Bro Trump just, sued himself, settled with himself, and then dedicated himself to split the money that he settled with himself to the, January 6th insurrection guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which he himself pardoned.
Exactly. Which he pardoned. I mean, talk about ultimate power.
You gotta love that example there.
Look,
I can do it to myself, not you. For myself, not you.
Jeez. Oh, man. Bro just took it to a whole another level.
We should all be like Trump.
Yeah.
No, that'll be pure chaos.
That'll be pure chaos. Look, I think I want, I will want to be, before the Epstein files came out, I would have wanted to be like Trump. But after the files came out, I was like,
Did you try downloading them?
Man, I want,
Did you try downloading
them? No, that's a whole lot of files. I just viewed them on a, now. There's a website where I just found a whole lot of them. Okay. Yeah.
Did you know that there's a new kind of, what's the WikiLeaks? There's another entity like WikiLeaks, because WikiLeaks is currently just held in suspension, and it seems like us, the fish rod, is like the last the last major. But now there's another platform that literally tries to do this, the same thing that they did. It would be nice to if they can continue that work, but yeah.
Well, the thing is, Julian Assange ended up being held for years in prison for, you know, without being charged, with his assassinations being planned because he was threatening, institutions that had a lot of money invested in them.
Mm.
Yeah. And especially the military industrial complex guys, which, by the way, your namesake warned them when he was leaving office, his final speech, when he was leaving, you know, when he was leaving the White House. He told them, there's a storm brewing in the weapons manufacturing here. If you don't watch these guys out, they are going to take over the entire government. They didn't listen. Fast forward to 2026.
Who's they, Hamoud? The people that he told us to literally hijacked decision making.
Yeah, you're right.
The lobbyists.
They hijacked the decision making and, New York is shaking things up with Mamdani is busy. And a lot of people are just getting, you know, they're losing their minds over it. But, just 3 minutes into the hour of six, that brings us to the end of Home Run for today. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. You all have a good one.
Yeah.